And you're back with Danny on 3CR Breakfast, and we've got Danny on the line from Fireproof. G'day, Danny.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. In fact, it's pretty extraordinary what Fireproof is doing at the moment, given the New South Wales government's passing of laws to ban, effectively, demonstrations on roads. Can you speak to this? What's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's obviously something that we didn't quite expect when we started to do this, but it's something that we thought may possibly happen. I always like, there's a sort of a Gandhi quote that goes that first they ignore you, which has happened for decades in this field. Then they laugh at you, which is mocking climate change. It's not real. What a load of garbage, greenies. And then third, they fight you. And that's sort of where we are now. And fourth, we win. So hopefully this is a good sign. So, yeah, but some strange circumstances brought this around, although they'll try and say that these law changes were brought in by the actions of us and of Blockade Australia, but really this is something they've wanted to do for a long time. It seems to be the rightward creep of Australian politics towards shutting down all protest, and they've given a good shot with this, so we're rolling with it and we'll see where we go. But it's not just a matter of affecting climate justice. It's going to affect all forms of progressive justice-seeking, First Nations, refugees, BLM, LGBT. Everyone's going to be affected by this. So hopefully we're going to have some great court cases soon, and this will be shown for the draconian pile of garbage that it really is.
Yeah, as your release points out, that climate activists were sometimes depicted as dangerous radicals, but the truly dangerous radicals are the countries that are increasing the production of fossil fuels. This is what this is. Climate change, standing there saying that the federal government and other governments in Australia have to actually pull their sleeves up and get on with dealing with the outcomes of climate change, like the floods, the fires. This is what you're about, isn't it?
Yeah, so obviously there's lots, we've been asking for, an end to fossil fuels and things like that for a long time, which are all worthy goals, but at the same time, we are already locked into at least 1.5 degrees, and unless we make drastic changes, we're probably going to have 2 or more degrees of climate change, and that's going to be devastating. So although we can't have these magic panaceas of having carbon capture and sequestration technology that'll just appear right when we need them, we do need to look at adaptation. So we're trying to get some of those things that can really help us. So we've got 3 basic demands. They're all doable, they're all reasonable, and they should already have been implemented. But, the government don't like to do things they need to do. They like to do things they want to do.
This underlines the fact that your group, Fireproof, says that you're very ordinary people that are standing up.
Yeah, obviously many of us have been involved in activism and social justice sort of issues, but we're just normal Australians. There are doctors, nurses, fireys, musicians, actors, all sorts of people from all different walks of life that all have this thing in common, which is we follow the science, we listen to those who hold the hose, is our little phrase, because, we've got fireys and all sorts of people saying that we need to do something about this, and that's why we're here.
Yeah, on this station, we applaud you. We don't think you have to stand up and say you're ordinary Australians. We already know you are, and you can be activists as to your heart's content. But it's interesting that you have to say it. You have to make sure that it's put out there that people who stand up in Australia over these issues aren't mad coots, effectively.
Yeah, I thought Australia was famous for the tall poppy syndrome, but it seems like we're famous for the opposite at the moment. It's fairly disheartening because the main criticisms that we seem to get are that we're selfish, which is hilarious. My wife and I we moved out of home virtually, left our 19-year-old daughter at home, and my guide dog isn't even here, because my wife and I are blind, by the way, just in case the audience didn't know. And we've spent weeks and weeks you know, planning and getting ready for this. We're giving up everything. And that's the whole point. The selfishness is thinking in a very short-term manner and saying, oh, no, I've been held up on the bridge for 10 minutes. The long-term thinking is, if this message doesn't get out, if we don't start to make some adaptations as well as to drastically reduce carbon emissions and start drawdown, we're all going to be in a hell of a lot of trouble. So,
can you give my listeners a little bit of an understanding of what it was like to be doing this, being on the road there? Tell us about what's going on.
So in this particular movement, I haven't been on the road. We've been very strategic about this. We've had teams that we've worked out. Some people have what we would call red rolls, which is, you know, the aim is to get arrested if that happens.
Yeah.
And there are others, others of us who need to be there in the background, looking after media, looking after regen, looking after all those sort of things that are really important to keeping a cohesive team together. Because if, obviously, if we all just went on the road and all went to jail,
yeah,
then
it'd be over, Rover.
Exactly. But my wife's been out on the road several times, and I know by sleeping next to her and hearing her nightmares and things that that takes a toll. And I think there's a little bit of, like, I have sat on the road before. My wife and I did an action in Kiama a while ago. Mm. And that was certainly, excuse the pun, for a couple of bloody, but that was very eye-opening because we copped an awful lot of abuse. We copped death threats. Oh. Our support team were threatened. People even said that blind people weren't able to, you know, obviously we got put on the road by them and we were being used by them because we don't have autonomy as disabled people.
And, right.
But yeah, it's certainly interesting because all we are is lazy, selfish hippies who should get a job, and the majority of us have jobs, and those who don't have given up their jobs to do this because it's so vital.
Yeah, yeah. Now let's get back to the demands. I didn't mean to cut you off about the demands. I want to focus on your demands now.
Okay, so the demands are in no particular order because, you know, we're Fireproof Australia, but when we started this campaign, all of a sudden came along all the floods. So
yes,
we're sort of looking at floodproofing as well. That was sort of interesting. So we have, I guess the main demand at the moment is that all survivors of unnatural weather conditions, such as floods and fires, get rehomed at the expense of the federal government, because that's what the government's for, to support the people, not to, you know, lock us up and not to criticise us. Two, we want to have smoke filtration put into all schools, all aged care and disability facilities, because it's Australian to protect the most vulnerable and to protect the future generation, because we've done this to them and we need to do something to fix that or to help us to move in through that. And the third is that, especially because of Black Summer and these increasingly common mega fires, we demand that the government pays for an aerial tanker fleet to do water bombing over on the fires, because the sooner they're put out, the less chance they become mega fires. So it's, you know, mitigation control. And, you know, Greg Mullins is Australia's most famous firefighter. He's been on lots of boards, and he's been sort of asking for this for many years. The fireys sort of asked, I think it was 2017.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've seen him speak. In actual fact, he, as a professional in this area, felt that he had to actually stand up. It was so grotesque that the federal government refused to actually meet with them.
Yes, exactly. And I saw a lovely little, well, I didn't, I heard a lovely little meme the other day, and it basically said, the RFS, thanks Scott Morrison for giving $44 million to Hillsong Church, but are sad that they never got 20 to buy their tankers.
Mm, yeah.
And that's sort of the state of things right now. But it would, you know, it's compared to tanks or missiles or submarines that don't exist, doing these things is so affordable and such a no-brainer. We have, you know, the government's betraying us.
I know that Block Eyed Australia and, I mean, people have been arrested, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. Like, Blockade Australia.
They're amazing. What heroes.
Oh, They absolutely are. Like, I'm not a spry person. You get my fat butt up onto one of those poles, it'll probably bend and snap. But what they do is just amazing. And the thing that about them that I absolutely love is that they just go and do it.
I know.
There's no ifs or buts, and they have one simple demand. We are going to impact infrastructure because, you know, they know that we've got to stop oil and gas and coal, and the best way to upset the people that are running it is to hurt their bottom dollar, because all they care about is money, not human life.
I mean, it's quite clear, or else they'd be doing something about it. I mean, it's not like, it's like they're juicing the lemon for the last scraps of wealth, and that, in fact, because otherwise you'd say that they've mentally deficient or, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
To be desperate over the last few crumbs of profit that you can eke from a dying planet at the expense of the future of all mankind and probably most species on the face of the earth, it is absolute insanity. And we just don't understand that sort of thinking. It's sociopathic, if you want me to be totally honest. And the problem is that these people have been doing this for so long, they've got so much entrenched power and they've got so much narcissism that they're not going to see what needs to happen. Where do their kids go? Do their kids get to go to New Zealand and live in their billionaires' bunkers? Because there'll be nothing else left if we don't do some drastic work now.
So what's the plan? What's going to happen moving on?
Well, yeah, we're always trying to pivot to what's going on. So obviously these new draconian laws that have come in have changed things. You know, it was always risky to do what we do, and people have been getting fines and different orders and things. But now that these laws have come in, we're talking about talking about 2 years imprisonment or up to $22,000 in fines, which is just, it's amazing. Like, this is for ordinary people who are saying, please listen to us, come to the table and talk. But we're the criminals, not the people who are actually causing this to happen. We're going to keep going as long as we possibly can, day after day. We're going to keep showing the idiocy of these laws by getting on the road, by doing what they don't want us to do, because we know that this is, as I said before, this is just a tactic to silence all dissent. The only they've made some rule changes so that the unions can do their demonstrations, because you don't want to put off other people who have power, but... Yeah.
Have they actually isolated certain groups in relation to stopping road traffic?
Well, I'm not sure they've actually done it for stopping road traffic, but they're being a lot more lenient on unions and things like that, so that there's still some form of democratic process going on. But
so what they're doing is pitting two interest groups against each other.
Yeah, in a way, what they're really doing is just they're making this so broad that they can allow what they want and they can shut down whatever they don't want.
Right.
And the problem is the things that they usually don't want are the things that are about progressive action, about decency and about survivability.
And, of course, Sydney is such a car-oriented place.
Oh, yeah. It's like, okay, one of the reasons that this really blew up, or one of the excuses that they were able to use to make this into such a big thing that they virtually illegally pushed through laws that weren't even had time to be questioned by the other parties and things, is because we had the gall to block the Spit Bridge on the day that the Minister for Roads happened to be driving to work. She got very upset. She looked over to the car next to her and she saw the poor parents in the car with their children trying to go to school, and she felt so bad for them and so bad for her having to wait 5 minutes that she decided, right, here we go. Let's go and change these laws and we'll get these hippies fixed. And it's like the absolute gall and selfishness of that is stunning.
That's interesting. Fascinating. I mean, it's just their level of little-mindedness, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, but also there are some funny things, because the Spit Bridge, you know, is gets people to some quite wealthy places and from quite wealthy places. So one of our people was actually being seen by a magistrate. The magistrate said, oh, and I should let you know, I was actually caught up in the traffic at the Spit Bridge the other week. Not that I'll hold that against you in my judgment. We've obviously affected the right people or the wrong people at the right or wrong time, depending on your perspective.
Thanks for talking to us, Danny. Good luck, eh?
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a lovely day.
You too.